English Radio. Coming up is the news.
In the U.S., Democrats retain control of the Senate, while the outcome of the vote in the House of Representatives still hangs in the balance. Germany facing a cost-of-living crisis, thousands of people marched through Berlin, calling for government control of food prices. Indonesia steps up security ahead of the annual summit of the world's 20 largest economies in Bali, overshadowed by the war in Ukraine. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Badr Zanjefi. Good to have you with us. Dozens of Americans have gathered outside an election office in the U.S. city of Phoenix to protest midterm election results. The rally was organized by supporters of former President Donald Trump. Protesters accused state officials of fraud, demanding a recount. Many in the group echoed the former president's claim that he lost the 2020 election due to voter fraud. They called for the military to intervene in Arizona's election.
This is a call out to the U.S. military. We, the people, can no longer combat these tyrants anymore by ourselves. We need military intervention. We, the people, are requesting military step in and redo our election. It was fake and false. It's full. Our government is full of corrupt people.
The Democratic Senator Mark Kelly is projected to hold onto his seat in Arizona, defeating Republican Blake Masters. The U.S. midterm elections were held on the 8th of November. Republicans have made modest gains, but the Democrats retained majority control of the Senate after winning a pivotal race in the state of Nevada. They have 50 Senate seats against 49 by Republicans. The seat in Georgia will be going to a runoff in December. In the event of the Senate being divided equally between the two parties, Vice President Kamala Harris will cast a deciding vote. It's not yet final which party will control the House of Representatives, but Republicans are close to a win. Colin Campbell tells us what a Republican control of the House would mean for the future of political legislation.
Well, right now, Republicans, of course, are looking like they'll still hold on to the lead, even though numbers are still coming in from states like California. We did get a late win in the state of Colorado with a with one of the senators winning over there. And so right now it was tied. So what the current president was looking at was a majority in both houses. But what happened was just this afternoon, we had the announcement that there would be a lead coming from Democrats in the Senate. So now we're looking at the House. Right now, Republicans hold the lead, but we're still getting numbers coming in that could indicate that the Republicans may hold on to the House. And if they did, it would mean that they would set the agenda largely for any type of political legislation that would be coming along throughout Congress. They would kind of set the pace. They would be the one to kind of dictate what the topics were that would be discussed and to be voted on. However, if the Republicans do lose the House, if the Democrats manage to hold on to it, that would give Biden a very clear mandate almost to really continue with his agenda. Usually the party that is in power loses many seats in the midterm election, which could may not happen with the current president if Democrats hold on to the House.
The German capital Berlin has witnessed a protest against inflation that's triggered by soaring energy prices. Now, in our news review program, we've discussed how the future will look like for Germany's energy sector.
And I welcome everyone to the news review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Okay, we have basically there have been protests throughout the German capital due to the rising cost of living, a crisis, and inflation has soared to 70-year high in Germany. Joining us now for the program is Paul Sheldon Foote, Professor Emeritus of the California State University, Irvine, California, and Mark Thornton, economist, joining us from Alabama. Hello, gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you both to the program now. I guess, Professor Foote, we'll start with you, sir. Your initial thoughts on when you have one of the strongest, if not the strongest, Eurozone economy falling on such tough times. What does that mean for the rest of Europe, and what does that mean going forward?
It's very alarming. The problem in Germany is, with a parliamentary system of government, they have to form coalition governments. Last year, the Green Party got 14.8% of the vote, came in third place. No one had a majority. And so if you are a politician in Germany and you're trying to govern, you have to look around among the minor parties and say, who do I want in my coalition? Do I want to take these climate extremist nuts or someone else? So it's a very rough situation. So Germany politically is very fragile because they have these kind of people in government. And then you've had the blockages recently of the roads. People can't get to work. They can't get to hospitals thanks to these extremists. And 2 years ago, you had the German farmers by the thousands out protesting, saying, you're going to close us down because of your new environmental rules. Well, how can people complain about food prices if they caused it to happen? As long as you keep voting for the Green Party in Germany, you deserve every bit of this.
Thank you, Professor. And Mr. Mark Thornton, welcome to the program. Sir, your initial thoughts on the soaring inflation that we're seeing basically worldwide, but how it's impacting Germans and Germany, and what that means when you have the strongest, as I mentioned earlier, economy in Europe in tatters like this.
With our other guest that Germany is unstable and climate extremists are really hurting the average person, their pocketbook, their food table, their fuel, everything. And there are a lot of reasons for inflation, but it's not just one country. It's most countries in the world now are experiencing 10% plus inflation. And ultimately, that has to go down to what's been happening at central banks. The Federal Reserve has enormously increased the money supply in the United States. The European Central Bank has done even more, along with the Bank of Japan. So some of those leading central banks have been emitting enormous amounts of paper money, and prices are going to rise. Now, sometimes they rise in the stock market and everybody's happy, but eventually that money has to be spent. That's what's happening now. It's coming up against shortages or scarcity in terms of grain products, in terms of fuel products, and that's exacerbating, but the basic problem is too much money, and it's driving up the prices of just about everything I see, and it's happening around the world. So the Germans, they may not be hungry today, but they're worried about being hungry tomorrow. They're worried about heating their homes this winter. They're worried about getting cut off from natural gas and not having, because of the German government, not having enough coal-fired energy and the shutdown of their nuclear reactors. And so the government is working against the people, whether it's the legislature or the central banks. They've all been trying to have things the way they want them personally, by just printing up money to pay for everything. And, you just can't do that. Eventually, you're going to face higher prices. And when people get hungry or when people are afraid of getting hungry or cold, they're going to go out and protest. And so a lot of the times people are protesting their governments, but they also need to realize that the central bank no matter how independent or dependent they are on the government, they're a big, big part of the problem.
Gentlemen, time has gotten the better of us. I want to thank you both for joining us on the program. Professor Paul Sheldon Foote, Professor Emeritus, joining us from Cal State University, Irvine, California, and Mr. Mark Thornton, their economist, joining us out of sunny Alabama. And that brings us to the conclusion of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
All right, moving on. The Ukrainian president says that Russian forces destroyed critical infrastructure in the southern city of Kherson before pulling out of the area.
As of this evening, the defense forces have established control in more than 60 settlements of Kherson region. The police have also started stabilization measures. Stabilization measures are also ongoing in Kherson. Our explosive experts have a lot of work everywhere in the free territory. Almost 2,000 explosive items have already been removed. Mines, tripwires, unexploded ammunition. Before fleeing from Kherson, the occupiers destroyed all critical infrastructure, communications, supply, water, heat, and electricity.
As Zelensky said, that extremely fierce fighting is going on in Donetsk region, east of Ukraine. Russian military ordered to pull out of Kherson on Thursday. The commander of Ukraine said it was no longer possible to keep supplying the city. Kherson was one of four regions in Ukraine that Moscow annexed in September. Our correspondent, Johnny Miller, who is covering the war in Ukraine, provided us with some details as regards the situation in Kherson.
To point out that it may be very dangerous for any pro-Russians still left in the city. Russia has made a point of evacuating over recent weeks pro-Russian civilians outside Kherson. They've learned the lessons in what happened in Kharkov a couple of months ago, where there were reports of pro-Russians being killed by Ukrainian soldiers when they took over the region. I've just watched a very gruesome video of which purports to be Ukrainian soldiers executing a Russian soldier with a hammer. Obviously, there's many Ukrainian soldiers who've lost their lives trying to take back Kherson. The vengeful nature of soldiers on the front line is well documented in warfare. And also, there's a huge hatred of Russians now in Ukraine. So there's a fear, and I've seen another video of mistreatment of someone who is said to be a pro-Russian, captured by Ukrainian soldiers in Kherson, being mistreated. So anybody who's said to be or accused of being pro-Russians might be in a very difficult situation in Kherson right now. We also expect many Western media outlets to come into Kherson soon. Ukraine says that they are documenting Russian abuses of power there. So there is a fear also there might be a propaganda campaign in Kherson to stir up more hatred of Russia, which will, of course, promote more war in Ukraine rather than promote both sides going to the negotiating table.
Indonesia intensifying security measures in Bali, and that's part of preparations for an annual summit of the world's 20 largest economies. This year's meeting has been overshadowed by the ongoing war in Ukraine. The G20 leaders, as well as directors of several international organizations, will be meeting at the resort island on 15th and 16th of November. A notable absence from the summit will be the Russian president. First arrivals are expected late on Sunday. The heads of state will move between the summit venue and their hotels inside a security ring protected by 18,000 military and police officers. Warships, choppers, and fighter jets have also been deployed as part of the security operation. Bali has seen no major security incidents for 20 years, but the area has witnessed deadly natural disasters, including a 2004 tsunami that killed more than 170,000 people in Indonesia alone. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin have placed emphasis on deepening political and economic collaboration. The Kremlin says that the two leaders discussed a number of issues on bilateral agenda. The two also stressed advancing cooperation in the political, trade, and economic fields, including the transport and logistics sector. The phone conversation came shortly after a senior Russian security official met with Iranian officials in Tehran, where the two countries pledged closer ties. The Iranian foreign minister has warned the UN Human Rights Council against attempts to organize a special session on the recent riots in Iran. He says if that is going to be the case, Iran's cooperation with the West will be negatively affected.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran." He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of ACT pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, November 13th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us which program or programs you like the best. Tell us your views and attitudes about our programs and our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, this Sunday program. And here we've received many reception reports from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to Atij Kumar from India, Lars Skoland from Sweden, and Anand Mohan from India, who have sent us reception reports. Thank you, Atij, Lars, and Anand. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. For your information, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to have a better service for our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving an electronic QSL card or eQSL card from us. And of course, here we've received many letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these great emails and letters. From India, we've received an email from Pradeep Chandra, one of our old and regular listeners. Again, from India, we've received an email from Avinash Chikat, one of our regular listeners. From Germany, we've received an email from Alex Choroba. Heike Prunen from Finland, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And the last but not the least is an email from Austria from Harald Seuss. Welcome back. As I said, Heike Pranen from Finland has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Dear friends, I had a pleasure of listening to your broadcast on medium wave. The reception was quite good. Quite good signal strength. No interference from other stations. Unfortunately, I do not have very good knowledge about the music of your country. I enclose with this reception an MP3 file recorded during the listening. If you're interested, you can verify this reception report to reply this email. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending this email to IRIB English Radio, Heike Pranen from Finland. It's good to hear that you like the quality of the signal. As you said, the reception was quite good. Quite good signal strength and no interference from other stations. Heike Pranen from Finland, why don't you tell us your views about our broadcast, about our programs? Yes, we will be happy when we know your opinion about the quality of our programs. Which program or programs you like the best? Yes, it's nice. And thank you for the MP3 file. And as you know, we had broadcast many programs about Iranian music and musical instruments, Iranian musical instruments. Maybe you can refer to our website and find the archive of our programs about the Iranian music. For your information, Iranian music has its own enthusiasts around the world. So to find the archive of our programs about Iranian music, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as verification. Wish you all the best. Heike Pranen from Finland. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And Harald Seuss from Austria has sent us a message, a piece of email. He says, "Dear staff, please, can you help me about sending the report of my reception? The email address I usually send my reception report is English@parstoday.com. Is this the right email address? Please let me know. Thank you a lot and many greetings from Austria. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, from the Islamic Republic of Iran. Harald Seuss from Austria, thank you for sending us this email. You know, our email address is not english@signparsley.com. The correct email is englishradio@signirib.ir. So, Harald Seuss, again, our correct email address is englishradio@signirib.ir. Yes, that is. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as confirmation. Thank you for this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And after short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Alex Chirova from Germany has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Dear Madam or Sir at IRIB English Radio, I would like to report a reception of your radio broadcast enclosed. You can find my reception report and an audio record as evidence for my reception. I would be glad very much to receive a QSL card or an EQSL of your station for my collection. Salam and warm greetings to you. Alex Chiroba from Germany, and please accept our warm gratitudes and appreciations to you for this email. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL for verification. Wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And from India, we've received an email from Pradeep Chandra, one of our regular listeners. Let's see what Pradeep says. Warm greetings from India. Few days ago, I could listen to your English program considerably well, which made me want to submit you a reception report. Kindly check the contents of this report with attached audio clips. I would appreciate your QSL verification card in return. With regards and best wishes. Pradeep Chandra from India, salam and warm greetings to you. Thank you for this email. So, you were listening to IRIB English radio programs, so it would be better if You told us which program you were listening and about the quality of the program you were listening. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as verification. Write to us soon, Pradeep Chandra from India. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And we wish you all the best. Welcome back, and here we've received another email from India from Avinash Chikant, one of our regular listeners. Avinash says, I am pleased to report the reception of your English language transmissions of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting on shortwave. I hope that you'd find this report of some use. If found correct, kindly verify these with your QSL card or even an EQSL. I'm interested in collecting postage stamps from across the world. It would be great if you can send a few used postage stamps from Iran, if you have any. Salam and greetings to you, Avinash Chikat from India. And please accept our appreciations to you for this email. My colleagues, of course, will soon send you an electronic QSL as verification. And regarding your request about sending you postage stamps, for your information, in the time of pandemic, sending any material or souvenir, any item on behalf of IRIB English Radio is forbidden. You know, in the time of pandemic, we cannot send our listeners any material and it is halted temporarily. But after this pandemic is controlled around the world, we again send our dear listeners the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. So Avinash Chikat from India, we would be very happy to hear your views and attitudes about our programs and broadcast. So we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL card as verification. We wish you all the best. Avinash Chikat from India. Dear listeners, before wrapping up this edition of Listeners Special, I do send my warm appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails and letters from around the world, including Ajit Kumar from India, Lars Skolan from Sweden, Anand Mohan from India, Harald Seuss from Austria, Avinash Chikat from India, Heikki Prunan from Finland, Alex Choroba from Germany, and Pradeep Chandra from India. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Bahrainis have come out and voted in parliamentary elections. Now, this may sound like a very positive development, but not so according to many environment rights groups who have called the environment of what is supposed to be a democratic process as political repression. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at what is behind this facade that the Bahraini regime is displaying, an election that the powerful Bahraini Shiite cleric, Sheikh Isa Al-Assam, has called for a boycott. But first, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Farrell Salnajim, joins us from Toronto. We also have journalist and political analyst Muhammad Ali Araki, who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. I'll start first with you, Muhammad Al-Araki in London, taking a look at what rights groups have said about this, describing the parliamentary elections there in the Persian Gulf island of Bahrain, being held in an environment of political repression. Tell us what your thoughts are on that, why they're saying that, and of course, then if we take a look at that, wouldn't that make, if you agree, the results to be a sham vote that would be meaningless?
Hello.
Okay, maybe we don't have a connection with you. That question goes to you, Faris Al-Najim.
Yes. You know, the Bahraini regime has never really been in real connection and real, dialogue with its own people, its nation. You know, we've seen the uprising that happened by the Bahraini peaceful protesters, in the early 2000s, and they were asking for reform, essentially, and the Bahraini regime suppressed them and attacked them and imprisoned all the opposition leaders and started attacking all the civilians everywhere. There is no dialogue with this regime because it does not care about the interests of the nation. It does not respect human rights. It does not respect the call for reform. It does not have any way of interacting with its own nation. It's a very suppressive type of regime, you know, and it's also a tribal regime. And it was UK installed as well. And the people that were protesting were really peaceful. Like, we've seen the protest live on TV everywhere. They were in the Pearl Roundabout at that time, asking for change and wanting change. And they attacked the Pearl Roundabout and they destroyed it. And it was a symbol of their revolution for reform. But now they're calling for the downfall of that regime. And unfortunately, we don't see the Western regimes calling for the regime change inside Bahrain, even though the majority of the nation is against the system itself. And they know that it's a suppressive system. They know it has nothing to do with democracy. But obviously, it serves their interest because the Bahraini regime has the fifth fleet of the Navy there for the U.S. And that is, very essential for them to control the region of the Middle East bully other countries in the region there. So the Bahraini regime also has normalized with the Zionist regime. And that's also another point of where the Bahraini nation, on a large scale, is against the Zionist regime. They're with the Palestinian, liberty. They're for the Palestinian human rights. They're for the support of the oppressed people. And we've seen that, throughout the history of Bahrain, the Bahrainis would always go on the streets and shout "Free Palestine" in Arabic and slogans like that, and come out on Al Quds International Day. So the Bahraini regime really, there is no credibility in these elections at all. And as we've seen, scholars such as Ais al-Qasim, a very honorable man, he said that we should boycott all Bahrainis, that are loyal to Bahrain and the nation, should boycott these elections and make sure that, they show the system and the world that this regime is not recognized by its own nation. And,
right. Yeah, so if we're, Muhammad Al-Araki, if we're looking at what the people are actually saying. These are the Bahrainis now. They are obviously going out to the streets. They've already done that. They protested the process. They announced that they're going to boycott it, many of the Bahrainis. And one of the things that they said about the election is that it's going to be a sham election. But they said the reason for their boycott is that this will serve, this election, it will serve the political trajectory of the ruling class, as they stated. How does that happen? How does this election that's taking place would serve the trajectory of the ruling class, as they stated?
The parliament that is in Bahrain, they are not the one to make the final decision. They help those higher up, including the king, in spreading their propaganda. So, and as we have seen in the past years, there used to be support for the Bahraini nation, different types of benefits and things like that. The parliament used to, once upon a time, help them. Now, the only thing we can see is that life situation is becoming worse. There is a lot of abuse, torture on the different Shia individuals across the country. So I believe it was mentioned by human rights groups that this is not going to, it's not a completely democratic election. Well, I want to say that the whole Bahraini regime is not a democratic government, let alone the election that is going there to be a democratic one. And so another thing is that the Bahraini regime does not really care about what the people want. The current elections is a election show. It's a show played by the regime to broadcast a image that, oh yes, we are very democratic. But in reality, no, the Bahraini government is not democratic, and the nation, and they do not give importance to what the nation wants. One of the most important things I could refer to now is that the ties they had with the terrorist regime of Israel, they recently made friends. Now, the Bahraini population, majority of them are Shia, and we have even people from the Sunni school of thought who opposed this. They came out to the streets, they did demonstrations, but the Bahraini government did not change. Now, we cannot expect that when this history of crime, this history of barbaric torture and different acts of crime that they have done, we cannot expect for the Bahraini regime to now be democratic all of a sudden overnight, and now for them to want to pay attention to the people of the country and to help them. And one of the most other important things are that there has been a high amount of inflation within the years that have passed. And another thing is that the poverty has risen, including between the Shia people. So the Bahraini government, not them, not their parliament, not the king, none of them are democratic people, and sure. The elections is not democratic at all.
Sure.
And I don't agree with the term that it's not totally democratic. The essence of it does not represent democracy whatsoever.
Okay. Hopefully we'll get to expand on that a little bit more. Talk about Israel here, and I think you also talked about it, Firas al-Najim, in terms of the normalization that's taking place. But can you please explain to us what Sheikh Issa Qassam meant? And I'm going to take a quote from him where he said the election means normalization. And he said that the election constitutes a test of the populace's awareness. And he explained that to elect means opening the door for Bahraini citizenship-bearing Israelis to vote for parliament members. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, so...
This will be for Firas al-Najim. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Firas al-Najim.
Yes, well, obviously the collaboration is a very deep collaboration between al-Khalifa illegitimate regime and the Zionist illegitimate regime. And they are giving them a lot of rights inside Bahrain, more than even its own citizens. And they want to satisfy them because they want to be really good slaves, you know, so they can stay in power. This is, one of the proposals from the U.S. If Bahrain really becomes a good slave to the Israelis and satisfies them and secures their interest, and then, you know, the Bahrainis will give it, they will be staying longer into power. So pretty much, you know, if the nation goes out and elects and gives legitimacy to these elections and to this regime, it's pretty much supporting and empowering the relations with the Israeli regime, because we know that the Israeli regime is totally an occupation of Palestine and is totally a human rights violator, and it's a totally breaching all international laws. They don't care about anything. And as a principle, as an Arab, as a Muslim, as a human, you know, you'd be against the Israeli regime. And this, you know, historically, I mean, even the Bahraini regime before used to, you know, speak out for the Palestinians somehow, some places, you know what I mean? But now they shamelessly don't have any more shame, unfortunately. And they're supportive of the Israeli regime, and they're not speaking out for the Palestinian rights. So Sheikh Isa Qasim was very precise. He was saying that if you support the Bahraini regime, and give it legitimacy in any way by joining these elections, it's giving legitimacy to the Israeli regime and the relations between Bahrain and the Israeli regime. And this will affect in a negative way, you know, for the Bahraini image and for the history of Bahrain and the future of Bahrain. So, you know, he gave a very clear message to the Bahraini people to choose the right side and to boycott the Bahraini regime, and that means to denounce Israel and all its crimes and all these relations between these two people. The nation is against Israel, so they should not go towards these elections in any way.
All right. Looking at a report, it's a 61-page report that's titled, "The Court is Satisfied with the Confession. Bahrain Death Sentences Follow Torture and Sham Trials." Mohammed Al-Araki, I'd like to then ask you if you have, in this report, citations being made about how thousands have been jailed. You have opposition leaders that have been jailed and tortured. Of course, the trials that are a sham that took place in a mass trial setting, including torture that took place in jails. How could then the U.S. that has its fifth fleet there, and also the U.K., which opened up its permanent military base back in 2018, not say anything about what's going on there?
So the United States of America and the United Kingdom, they are both governments, that oppressive governments, that have gone and had a big say in the formation of the Bahraini state. Mr. Ian Henderson, who some know him as the Butcher of Bahrain, who was a police officer who he founded, and he taught many people the different barbaric acts of torture in Bahrain. I had a friend who he was arrested in Bahrain, and to my surprise, this friend was tortured, and he mentioned to me that, yeah, it was this person. They introduced himself as that. So the Bahraini government, they suppress any voice that disagrees with them. There are many different political parties, political individuals, who they arrest them, they torture them, revoke their citizenship. Dr. Jalal Fayrouz, Saeed Shahabi, Ayatollah Isa Qasim, the leader of the Bahraini revolution, these are all people who they have sent them out of the country, apart from the different tortures that they have gone through. So the Bahraini government is not looking to give importance, to listen to the words of its nation. They are ethnically cleansing people in the country. Now, you witness that you have different foreigners come into the country and they provide them with citizenships. Majority of the people now at the ballot boxes, the boxes where they go to vote for elections, they are not Bahraini. They have been given citizenship for the regime to paint a picture of, yes, they are democratic. But in reality, that's not the case. I have many friends. There are many people who the act of torture that they do on them is very inhumane. And I wouldn't be surprised. The United Kingdom and the United States of America, they themselves, they were the founders of crime and the founders of torture and these acts of terror. They brought them all these acts into Bahrain. So I wouldn't be surprised for the United Kingdom and the United States of America to remain silent when they see these things happening. And the Bahraini government is looking to paint a form of legitimacy for itself. But for the people who go inside the country, or even you talk to the normal people from the nation, you'll realize that, no, that's not the case.
Uh-huh. Well, when Pope visited Bahrain recently, Firas al-Najim, November 3rd to the 6th. You had 130 human rights organizations, 130 of them that came out and demanded things like the release of prisoners of conscience to Pope Francis. They asked him to adopt at least an initiative in terms of urging the Bahraini regime to end these types of violations. 130 human rights organizations. Why didn't this get highlighted? Why didn't why wasn't there any type of coverage of this? Because we know that, since we're talking about the U.S. and the U.K. that was just mentioned, they're so quick to want to convene a U.N. session when it comes to human rights of different countries. But yet here, you have 130, again, human rights organizations that have mentioned what is going on in Bahrain, but yet nothing of that sort. Why is that?
Because, you know, the U.S., the U.K., and a lot of these Western regimes, unfortunately, you know, they're selective on human rights and they're biased. It's just based on their interests and their benefits and their control. So, for instance, in Bahrain, you know, the regime supports and gives them power and gets them, lets them have their, you know, navy bases and all this kind of stuff to control the region. So pretty much it's a puppet for them. So they just keep them in power. And they don't speak about the human rights problems there. But then, because Iran supports the Palestinian cause and stands against Israel and the hegemonic powers trying to control the Middle East, so they find any little small issue that happens in Iran, and right ahead they try to exploit it and speak about human rights. So it's all selective, you know. They care. It's an agenda. Right now, all they care about pretty much is the Ukrainian people and you know. Destabilizing Iran, because Russia is their enemy at this point, and Iran is their enemy, and this is how it is. They don't care about humanity as a whole, because they would have spoke out about Shireen Abu Akleh when she was killed by the Israeli IDF war criminals. But we didn't see an outrage. We didn't see so many you know, campaigns. We didn't see that all social media was hashtagging her name, and all these politicians were speaking about it. But now, Mahsa Amini, for instance, in Iran, everybody's exploiting it. They're pushing it everywhere, and they're trying to cause destabilization and problems inside Iran. It's a biased system. The mainstream media and these politicians and these governments, you know, it's like they're programmed to a certain way, and they follow a certain narrative and have a certain agenda, and they do not care about humanity. If they did, they would stand up for all humans that are being oppressed anywhere in the world, and they would be working for real justice, and not just you know, choosing and picking what kind of humans they want to support and what humans they don't deserve support. So pretty much some humans for them don't deserve support and don't deserve rights and justice, and some humans they do. So you know, it's a very, very ugly game, and I think the masks have been revealed slowly, and they're getting more exposed, and the world is waking up. I think a lot of people in the world are starting to figure out that a lot of these regimes, they're not truly working for world justice and world peace and things like this.
Sure. I do have to mention a name here, and I'd like to get your reaction to it, Muhammad Ali Arabi, and that is Abdulhadi Al-Khawaja. There are many who are inside jails, but he's been there since the year 2011. I mean, he was the architect, from what many are saying, of Bahrain's human rights movements, and leader of the protests that happened back in 2011. He was calling for democracy and greater freedom in the Persian Gulf region overall, but of course for Bahrain also. When you have these types of leaders that are in jail, along with many others, their voices are not being heard. What vehicle can be used? We know that his daughters are active on the scene, trying to make sure that the voices of Bahrainis are still heard. But there's not much more that we hear about Bahrain. What can be done in order for those voices to be heard?
In order for the voices to be heard, there has to be work with the different organizations, the different people that we have around the world in human rights organizations, to work with them, including different media outlets, to be able to spread the word of the oppressed nation of Bahrain. And this is something that's very important within the Western countries. People need to go, they need to talk to their MPs, they need to talk to their government officials. Now, not expecting the Western governments to come here and change something, but at least they normally would reply, and that reply would be, and they could it could be used, published on social media. His Eminence Ayatollah Imam Sayyid Ali Hussein al-Khamenei, he has a term talking about jihad of clarification. Now, this, I believe, with regards to the Bahraini situation, to make the voice of the people heard, it's a duty that if you're a Muslim, to go around anywhere you can through any social media tool that you have, through any different work, any different gatherings that you can hold, to talk about this to people, to expose the true face of the Bahraini regime. So, and then when people start to realize what is actually going on in Bahrain, now no Western government, nobody will be able to to close their eyes onto what actually is happening. Conferences need to happen, different gatherings, and these are activities that they are the duty of us if we are an actual human being.
Sure. Final question, Faisal Najim. No matter what happens in Bahrain, if there were to be a day where this democratic ambitions are actually becoming a reality, do you agree that that would be stifled and it would be crushed because you have a bridge that connects Bahrain to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and they cannot stand for a Bahrain that represents democracy, because then they would be frightened that that type of stance or approach by people would spread inside the kingdom, which is something that they cannot afford. Is it true, or is it accurate to look at it that way?
Well, this did happen, right? Like, I mean, earlier in the 2000s when the Bahrainis rose up and they were protesting and they got close to, you know, the so-called King Hamad al-Khalifa's palace, they surrounded that, and that's when the Arabian Peninsula forces from UAE and Saudi Arabia crossed, obviously, through that bridge.
Okay.
And they suppressed the people, and they started to, use all kind of sectarian attacks against the people of Bahrain. And,
Thank you. I'm sorry, we're fresh out of time. I do apologize. That was Faisal Najim talking to us from Toronto, manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, and journalist and political analyst Muhammad Ali Araki. Thank you. Spoke to us from London. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Miko Itawe and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. You are listening to IRB English Radio. This is Asma. I study literature, and it's been quite a while that I come here to share my ideas with you. Not as a lecturer, of course, but as someone who is just as eager as everyone out there to find the road to a better life, which is actually the essence of our existence. Anyway, I hope everything is just fine with you and you're doing well. Now, every single session, as the ritual of this program, we talk about something important related to us, human beings. And today we will have some perspectives on broad-mindedness and a struggle against luxuries and a splendor of life. Well, it might sound like a session to a far-fetched, pious life that is pretty difficult to achieve, but that is just not the truth. Well, we might have this idea that these sort of things that we talk about are just for pious, holy, sacred men of God. Maybe it is, but let's penetrate through it and find out the truth together. To live a life, we have some basic needs like shelter to protect us from the cold of winter or the heat of summer, food for our body to move on, perfect clothing, and of course, money to provide all of those mentioned issues and stuff. Now, there's no way to ignore these needs, but the problem starts when we get to go so far away when we get to go to extremes and extravagant demands. This way, the objectives of one's